Welcome to Ono, Ross, and Carrie, the show where we don't just report on fringe science, spirituality, claims of the paranormal. No way, we take part ourselves.
Yep, when they make the claims, we show up so you don't have to. I'm Ross Blotcher.
And I'm Carrie Poppy. And I'm not Corey Poppy.
You are not Corey Poppy. You are not Caroline Corey.
True.
But you've introduced our topic. We're going to be talking about Corey Good. And trying to figure out just how good Corey Good is.
Can we make sure that since he has an E at the end of his last name, that we call him Corey Good?
Good. And it's C-O-R-E-Y. He's adding E's everywhere.
Yeah, he's really trying to elongate the time his name is in your mouth.
When I see Good, I think of Salem and the witch trials. Like,
oh, yeah. Goody Proctor.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Love The Crucible.
Great play.
Yep.
I was trying to, the guy who was married to Marilyn Monroe, why can't I think of his name?
Arthur Miller.
Thank you.
He's on my wall in my room, in my office.
I see Marjo in your office and I see James Randi.
Okay, I'll prove it. Everybody stop.
I believe you.
Nope. Well, I'm sure you do, but you gotta see it.
Now Carrie's gotta prove it. Carrie commissioned this piece of artwork of Arthur Miller, and it says, "Because it is my name."
Mm-hmm.
Was that in reference to something?
That's from The Crucible.
Oh, nice. It's a very nice painting.
Thank you. Yes, I like to get inspiring figures painted. It's a little gift I give myself every couple of years.
Very good.
Very good.
Corey Good.
Exactly.
All right. So, yes. So who is this Corey Good, and why should we care about him?
Well, we first ran into Corey Good at Contact in the Desert a couple years ago.
In 2017, our first contact in the desert, actually in the desert, he was one of the featured speakers there. And I feel like he was kind of on the ascent in the UFO community at the time.
And then I followed him on Facebook at the time.
Oh.
And I remember feeling like, this guy's hard to track. This guy's got a lot of thoughts all at once.
Yeah. I went back to look at their website, the list of speakers for Contact in the Desert 2017, and here's how they described him then. Identified as an intuitive empath with precognitive abilities, Corey Good was I've got to stop that. was recruited through one of the MyLab programs. We'll talk about that, but that's military abductions. Mm-hmm. At the young age of 6, Good trained and served in the MyLab program from 1976 to 1986/87. Towards the end of his time as a MyLab, interesting, new uses of the word there, he was assigned to an IE support role, and they're saying IE for intuitive empath, not Internet Explorer or not id-est.
Yeah.
That confused me the first few times. I was reading his graphic novel. We'll come to that. But they kept referring to IE. And I was like, he's an IE? What? Oh, intuitive empath. Okay, this is like a title.
Yeah, you can't use letters that way.
So he was assigned to an IE support role for a rotating Earth delegate seat shared by secret Earth government groups in a human-type ET Super Federation Council.
Okay.
Again, this is how they're introducing
him. Yeah, this is the bio.
Yeah, as a kid, he was being used by the government for this space program. Oh, here we go. MyLab is a term coined for the military abduction of a person that indoctrinates and trains them for any number of military black ops programs. I feel like they lost the sentence partway through that. Good's IE abilities played an important role in communicating with non-terrestrial beings termed interfacing as part of one of the secret space programs, SSP. During his 20-year service, he had a variety of experiences and assignments, including the Intruder Intercept Interrogation Program, assignment to the ASSR ISRV Auxiliary. There's too many acronyms here.
Asrissive?
Yeah, well, there's two separate terms. Mm-hmm. And I guess ISRV was supposed to help clarify ASSR. I don't know. Auxiliary Specialized Space Research, Interstellar Class Vessel, and much more. There you go. That's what that stands for.
Oh, good. Now I'm clear.
This all occurred in a 20 and back agreement from 1986 to 2007 with recall work until the present day.
Okay, that will come back, 20 and back.
Oh yeah, we'll have plenty to say about that. And here they just say he has a 20-year service, but there's more to it than that. Okay, good. Now
there's more to all of this.
Oh, there's so much
than there appears.
Oh, no kidding.
Or maybe less.
This is just what we could have known about him in 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Is it like Transformers where there's more than meets the eye?
Or are you saying things that are so outlandish that the reality actually is, in fact, less strange than fiction?
They go on. Good now works in the information technology and communications industry with 20 years' experience. Well, he works in 20-year increments.
Sure.
In hardware and software virtualization.
He better be at least 40.
Physical and IT security, counter-electronic surveillance, risk assessment, and executive protection. And served in the Texas Army State Guard from 2007 to 2012. C4I, Command, Control, Communications, Computation, and Intelligence.
Texas Army State Guard. Okay, got it. So he grew up in El Paso.
I found a newspaper article congratulating him on his second birthday. So he was born February 22nd, 1970.
Okay.
I was having a hard time elsewhere finding when he was born.
Okay, born in 1970. Well, that's a nice round number.
Yeah. So
the year the Mary Tyler Moore Show debuted.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that would make him 54.
Okay.
The time in the Texas Military Forces was unrelated to the Secret Space Program Service. Nice to clarify that.
Good.
Good continues his IE work, his intuitive empath work now, and is in direct physical contact with the Blue Avians.
Physical contact? Direct physical contact?
Yes, yeah, keep that in mind.
Interesting.
With the Blue Avians of the Sphere Being Alliance. Again, we're going to have to unpack all of this,
sure.
So I know this is a lot coming all at once. Who have chosen him as a delegate to interface with multiple ET federations and councils on their behalf, liaison with the SSP Alliance Council, that Secret Space Program Alliance Council, and to deliver important messages to humanity. Whew, I can't wait for these important messages.
This is still his bio from Contact in the Desert?
That was his bio from Contact in the Desert.
And so he didn't say what talk he's giving or anything.
Not on the website that looking at. But he was also real good buddies with David Wilcock. And we talked a lot about David Wilcock when we were covering Contact in the Desert. I'm not sure we even mentioned Corey Good at the time.
I might have. I know I was reading his stuff on Facebook a lot. I think I was at the time following this guy, Daniel List, who calls himself the dark journalist, possibly ill-advised.
I remember that name coming up a lot, yeah.
Okay, and he would cover Corey Good's antics even then. I mean, I've got something in front of me here from Facebook, dark journalist 2017, where he's already complaining about Corey, so.
2017, okay. This timeline shall emerge, but ever since Contact in the Desert, I had thought of him as just one of these people kind of in the Linda Moulton Howe sphere, these people who claim to have been out in space and doing like military work in space, but hadn't thought of him too much more except when his name would come up in these various things that we watch and read until this latest Contact in the Desert.
Okay.
And he was more conspicuous for his absence. And even still, I hadn't really registered that until between lectures, I met this new guy in the central atrium, Paul. Seemed like a nice guy. He looked like he could be one of the band members of Weezer. He just had that kind of like feel to him. And as we were talking, he was rolling a marijuana cigarette. He was saying, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm such a big fan of Linda and there's so many great speakers here. This is my third contact in the desert. And I said, oh, I think it's just my second. And he said, yeah, though, man, it's a real bummer about Corey Good.
Mm.
And I said, oh, well, what's a bummer? Like, I thought, did he get hit by a bus? What happened?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, well, there were these depositions released. And like, he said some just really not cool things.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he even admitted that he had embellished.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pull out my phone and I've been keeping notes. And so I'm just writing down, look up Corey Good deposition. Anyways, Paul was a nice guy. Glad I met him. But he got me started on this. And
sure.
So I just did a quick search for that and found this YouTube video listing the first part of a Corey Good deposition. And turns out it broke up into six parts, about just shy of 7 hours worth of deposition.
Yeah.
And so I started watching it and oh my goodness. I watched enough of it during that Contact into the Desert that I left the conference like really down, like it was kind of depressing, just what it revealed about the UFO alien community. And it made both of us very curious to learn more about Corey Good.
Yeah. So a deposition is when you're basically formally interviewed by counsel in a lawsuit you're somewhat involved in.
And the things you say have a certain weight to them, because if you say incorrect things knowingly, you could be held liable for those.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you're under oath. So in this case, it seems like Corey got himself into a little legal flurry where people were kind of suing each other back and forth. And in the midst of that, he gets deposed, which means he was interviewed by the opposing counsel.
So we'll definitely talk about the content of that, but let's work our way back to cover Corey's history in this movement. So, as you might gather from his bio, his real life job had been IT work, computer networking, stuff like that, security.
Good.
But apparently, around 2009, he says he came out as one of David Wilcock's unnamed informants.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so David Wilcock is another UFO guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who's, oh man, such a dramatic figure. Just, boy, you're in his presence and you will not be able to get a word in edgewise. He's just a storm.
He sucks up all the oxygen in whatever room he's in, which is saying a lot when you're on stage with Jimmy Church.
Yes.
Jimmy Church. Or Linda Moulton Howe. You know, these are all people who really crave the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And boy, it's just the David Wilcock show when he's there. He's loud. He's flamboyant. He claims to not necessarily be the reincarnated Edgar Casey, but he seems to make a big deal out of the fact that he has like the same facial structure as Edgar Casey, who is like America's prophet. And he had a show on Gaia TV. And Gaia, we've mentioned them before. They're the ones who are one of the main sponsors of Contact in the Desert.
Also Conscious Life Expo.
Right. Yeah, there's this kind of small group of conferences. And yeah, Gaia definitely plays into this. And they were founded as this, well, initially there was like a whole yoga component and that sort of got spun off into its own business. But they produce this media network that's publicly traded. It doesn't look like a good stock. Don't buy it. But, you know, they produce this kind of content and they're worth quite a bit of money from what I understand. You know, they found a way to monetize this sort of spiritual seeking, alien stuff, quantum consciousness, the sorts of things you hear about from us at these conferences. So he had a show on the network called Cosmic Disclosure. Again, according to Corey Good, I guess as early as 2009, he was feeding information and saying, hey, I'm one of these people in the secret government program. Let me feed you some knowledge. But apparently he was then encouraged, hey, why don't you come out and be open about this? And then we can use you as an on-screen persona, an informant, and you can talk about this military program that you were raised in as a child.
And I'm picturing David Wilcock being like, this guy's my savior. I finally have someone who's willing to come out and speak and say this stuff out loud. And, you know, he seems with it and reasonable. And, oh, man, good.
And Corey Good looks good on screen. He's a good-looking guy, strong features. At the time, dark, curly hair that he usually had pulled back.
Yeah, he looks like he'd be the lead in like a movie in the 90s. The guy who comes to fix the fence, but like is hot in an understated way, but he's all dirty. Maybe I'm just describing a porn, but in my head, this is a 90s film.
Yeah, but I mean, he could be, if he were an actor, like, you know, he's someone you would feature on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he kind of rose to prominence. And in the deposition, he stated that he had been on workers' comp after his IT work for a couple of years, like 2013 and 2014. He said in 2015, he really got full-time with doing the appearances and contributing to alien-related media. It sounds like that's when it started. At some point, he became a regular fixture on David Wilcock's show. And also, I found him in a 2017 episode of Ancient Aliens. And so you had Linda Moulton Howe talking to Giorgio Tsoukalos about Majestic 12. That was the name of the episode, and it was about that program. And there he was featured talking about Project Solar Warden. Solar Warden.
Okay.
That's what he was targeted for as a child. And it was because of an earlier project during World War II called Project White Coat.
Oh, I've heard of that one. Yep.
Corey Good's grandfather was a Seventh-day Adventist.
Okay, I was wondering this because that's what I associate with Project White Coat.
Oh, okay. And he was a conscientious objector, so he didn't serve in the war, but he was able to be in this program, which apparently involved experimentation with viruses.
Mm-hmm.
Project White Coat was set up during World War II. Officially, they were taking soldiers and experimenting on them with viruses. Well, it turns out that our government was working with genetics far before we supposedly discovered them in the 50s. Genetics were being manipulated and genetic changes were being delivered to people through viruses. My grandfather happened to be one of these participants. They were keeping an eye on my lineage because of this program, and they brought me into this training program that would last from the age of about 6 years old to about 17 years old when I was officially drafted into Solar Warden.
So Project White Coat, if I recall correctly, is a real thing, right? It was basically that if you wanted to not go to war, you could instead volunteer yourself as a voluntary medical subject.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And so the way he describes it in Ancient Aliens was that
very soon after joining the space program, I was assigned to a research vessel. I was doing communications. A sub-program that I was a part of in the beginning was called the Intruder Intercept and Interrogation Program. Different beings were living on our planet amongst us, and the mandate was to capture these beings, interrogate them, and find out why they were here.
So there's these bad space beings trying to attack the planet, and he would be involved in the interrogation process. And because he is an intuitive empath, he could tell if they were lying or telling the truth. This is more detail I got later from the graphic novel.
Okay. Wow.
But he says the secret space program goes back to Nazi Germany, and now there are like dozens of nations involved, including the US, China, Russia, Britain.
Not terribly secret, is it? I mean, the US is working with China on this. I mean, wow.
Yeah, collaboration.
Kind of great news.
Yeah. The future is cooperative, just like Max Fun. Good point. Yeah. And they're okay with him spouting all this on cable TV. Why not?
Yeah. Okay.
And then he would keep coming back. They would then use him to buttress other points. He'd talk about things he'd seen on Mars or the moon. They were looking at satellite and rover photos and just doing the standard pareidolia thing. Look at that. That doesn't look like a natural formation. It may be a long abandoned base, but that's definitely like some kind of housing structure or something. And it's proof of the ancient builder race that goes back millions of years or however long ago.
So pareidolia is where you think you see evidence of an actor that's not actually there. You're convinced that, there was clearly another human in this room because the pattern that I see here is only explained by another human having come through here when it may have been the wind, it may have been a storm, it may be a million reasons the room looks
something
like that.
We're all very good at, and we've done it either with cottage cheese ceilings or marble countertops. We just find faces and images in things. And that's clearly what was going on in these clips on Ancient Aliens. But also, every time you'd have Corey Good show up on screen, shortly thereafter, David Wilcock would show up. And they were just clearly buddies.
Mm-hmm.
So this might be a good moment then to talk about this graphic novel. Now that Corey Good has this kind of public story, he's found various ways to turn it into courses, into websites, into further additions to his story.
Makes
but
sense.
One that really got my attention is that he said he has graphic novels and a video game in the works.
Okay.
And part one of the graphic novel has come out. It came out in 2022.
We're recording this in 2024.
And I was really curious, like, ooh, I want to see the graphic novel.
Yeah.
So I bought it, $10. It's called Ascension Chronicles Spheres of Influence.
Okay. I'm looking at the cover.
What do you think?
I mean, it looks like someone who's trying to go for that comic book aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely looks like something that I would see at one of those stores. Looks like too much is going on, too many ideas. There's a guy with a crystal ball, but there's also a huge insect behind him. But there's also someone with a mask on, but there's also just two children next to him. It just feels like it doesn't tell me anything except chaos.
Many colors going on as well. Yeah, it's super busy. All the colors of the rainbow are present on this one image. The guy holding the sphere that's shining in the foreground, that's Corey Good himself.
Corey Good. Yep.
Okay. And he's surrounded by a cast of characters, kind of like you'd have on one of those composite movie posters where they're like, let's put all the heads of people all around.
Yeah.
And if it was done by a competent artist like Drew Struzan, it would look great, but this looks like a comic
Drew
cover.
Struzan.
He's the best.
Oh, we love him. Hi, Drew. Just kidding. I have no idea who you are. Disney?
He's done Disney posters. Let's see. You've seen his work. Oh, the Muppet films. He did the Muppet
the
Christmas
original ones?
Carol poster.
Oh, cool. Oh, those are good.
And the Muppet Treasure Island.
I've never seen that.
Okay, well, you should. It's great.
I should.
I could go off for a long time about Drew Struzan's posters, but this is not of that caliber.
Okay.
There's a lot of characters here already, including some very prominent blue aliens that have they look vaguely chicken-like or bird-like. And
fish-like?
It's appropriate because they are blue avians
name
of the alien.
I would have thought that was a fish if I hadn't been led.
You know what? That's totally fair. I could see that being like in the Guillermo del Toro universe as like a fish-like creature.
Mm-hmm.
And then that thing in the background, that's some kind of reptilian alien. Anyways, let's hop in here a bit. So in his introduction to this, he particularly thanks David Wilcock. To David Wilcock, I am indebted to you beyond words for helping me bring my information to millions of people, sticking with me through thick and thin, and the unwavering support, trust, and belief in my experiences.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Unwavering support, belief, and what was the third thing?
Trust and belief.
Trust. Wow. Okay. Well, wow. Okay. So he's really setting it up.
Now, timing's going to...
He's telling a true story.
Yeah. And timing's going to be really important here. So this is in 2022, but 2022 wasn't done yet. And oh boy, a lot's going to go down.
Interesting. Okay.
So right at the beginning, he gives you like this cast of characters so you can understand what aliens he's going to talk about. And these are all new names. He has a few new categories, but there are some that feel like kind of rebranded other aliens that we've heard of before.
Okay.
The blue avians seem to be like his major, I was going to say trademark. Well, that's true. We'll get to this. An ancient guardian race of angelic beings normally existing beyond limitations of space and time, the blue avians appear to key individuals in order to gently guide humanity to an enlightened timeline.
Key individuals.
Like Corey Good.
Individuals.
That's
interesting.
Yep. You're making a good point. So
somebody's going to come up later where he makes it seem like he's the only person they can talk
good.
To.
Point, though not the point Good would make.
Right.
That blue avians...
Poppy point.
That blue avians seem to talk to multiple individuals. Okay.
Says Corey Good in his own graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Zulu, this one makes me uncomfortable. They're a peaceful, joyous, and celebratory alien civilization and the most advanced in exotic abilities of our local galactic neighbors. The Zulu dance their way into surprising forms of supernatural service. They're just depicted as black people.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Bush people.
Yep. Okay.
But wearing like gold raiment.
Got it. That reminds me of I forget her name, but the woman who started In of the Seventh Ray.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, she, another metaphysical character, and she would channel this black man and then just spout what she felt he was saying.
Oh, my.
And it would be all this stuff about, you know, the race relations in America. And I was like, oh, you're not the person.
Ooh.
Ooh, you're not the person, but you think you're this other person.
Oh, my goodness.
So you think you are the person.
Whatever this dynamic is, it's not great.
Yep. We got a Rachel Dolezal kind of situation, but with aliens.
So we're not done with that. The next group is the Mayans. They're a diminutive alien race of highly effective healers and are dubbed the Mayans due to their connection they share with the Central American civilization of centuries ago.
Mm.
And visually, they look like the Maya. The Anshar. Okay, so this one is the rebranded Tall Whites, I'm pretty sure.
Like
the Nordic aliens. It's a society of evolved humans from millions of years in the future.
Great.
And they are locked in a fierce timeline war with the Draco, sending their agents into our past to monitor and protect their history. So I'll cut forward to the Draco. That is essentially his version of the reptilians.
Okay.
They're these big, buff, reptilian-looking things. A race born from pure darkness. They leverage great power and psychic ability to control humanity through proxies, feeding on fear and suffering to advance the reaches of their empire.
Oh, good. I'm glad he created a category to put all the people he doesn't like in.
And they have apparently an AI god who never shows up in this book. So I guess he's supposed to be in the future graphic novels. And considering everything that's happened with Corey Good, I'm not sure the future graphic novels will ever come into existence.
Aww.
We shall see. Okay. Or this game he keeps talking about. And then there's the Shadow Warriors, lurking beings of origins unknown. They are a living darkness sent to spy on targets of interest, like Corey and his family.
Okay.
That's our cast of alien characters. So This comic is, I'm just going to say, poorly illustrated.
I agree. You sent me some pictures on your telephone. And yeah, the art's not... It's better art than I could do. I always feel like I need to say that because I'm not an illustrator. But I have gotten used to looking at good illustrations.
Sure. And also, there's usually this internal critic where you realize like, oh, maybe I shouldn't release this to the world. Maybe I'm not the right one to illustrate these books. Then again, I got to say, I looked at the various Instagram pages and online portfolios of the artists involved, and they all seemed capable of good work.
Okay.
But maybe they just had a crazy deadline or not a lot of money. Because, you know, you can do things either fast and well, but not cheaply, or you can do them fast and cheaply, but not well. You know, you get two out of three.
Yeah.
And this is a lot of like photographs of Corey and his wife and family and various models that they've used where you can tell they've just kind of photoshopped it, moved it around, then sort of painted a body around it. And the proportions are often off. And oh, it just made me so uncomfortable.
It's really odd looking.
Yeah, it's unsettling.
Yeah,
in a way it shouldn't be.
Strange about it.
But they were going for full color and kind of a photographic treatment. Anyway, so he introduces his story as a young boy, seeing a ship that came down to pick him up, and it looked like a pirate ship.
Ah, cool. Okay.
Yeah, he finds out later that when girls are absorbed into the program, they have a large princess castle that comes down to take them.
Sure.
And the boys get a pirate ship.
Okay. Okay, I'm looking at this pirate ship. It looks dope. It looks like Pippi Longstocking.
Yeah.
Docking, and Corey, as a little boy, gets inside the ship and is looking through a porthole.
And he's taken up to space. Then from the exterior, we see he's actually inside of a UFO. But then we shoot forward to the future, and his wife's worried about him because he's in something of a fugue state. Corey, pay attention. What's going on? Are you okay? And he has a little tickle fight with his kids. Oh, I'm totally fine. But then suddenly, he gets all these like pains of half-remembered horrible things happening to him and sort of collapsing, and his kids are all worried. And then he's seeing things that look like little dots showing up on him, and the implication seems to be there's something surveilling him, or like a sniper with a laser focused on him.
Oh, gosh. Okay. How old are his kids here?
I would imagine like 8, 10, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. The reason he's all doubled in pain is because his son, during the tickle fight, accidentally stabs him in the eye with his finger or something.
Ooh.
That's what's going on here. Okay, so...
Okay, so it sounds like he had some sort of big reaction while he's outside playing with his kids, tickling them.
Yes.
His reaction is so big that the whole family's like, this needs explaining. And then he's like, actually, I can. There, I have these recovered memories that are coming back.
Okay, we're almost there. So okay. But this is the inciting incident. Because okay. His eye is hurt and he's wearing a patch over it, he has to go in to the doctors and get examined.
Okay.
It's interfering with his work. So finally, the doctor says, oh, this, you know, there's more damage here than could be done by a child. But as soon as he starts operating on the eye, all of a sudden, Corey has all these fragmented memories come back into his mind all at once.
While having eye surgery. Well, that's really interesting. That seems like that could be something you believed.
So, okay. this isn't all in the graphic novel, but piecing this together from other interviews of his that I've heard, it was a couple things. Like, apparently this whole space program that he was involved in, they would do the Men in Black thing to you and clear your memory when you were done.
Of course.
And then put you back in the world.
Got you.
And so
memory.
You'd forget your 20 years of service. Mm-hmm. But he had two things working in his favor. One, he was an intuitive empath, i.e.
Yep.
I.e.
I.e. I.e. I.e. T.M.
And another was that this surgery somehow unlocked something that had just been sort of like
very
severed.
Kimberly Meredith.
Yeah, that's true. Like a medical procedure bringing back or introducing new abilities.
Well, yeah, medical an injury and then a medical procedure making you have some sort of unusual eye effect that you read a bunch into.
And they show him just kind of living in despair as situations in his current life are giving him flashbacks to things from his alien fighting past.
Now, is there any mention in here about him exploring the concept of false memory?
Nope.
Okay.
Doesn't come up. There's a lot of late night views of his clock hitting 3:33. We've encountered this, yeah, with Mike Clellan and others, you know, this angel number, this significant number. So 3:33 a.m. is a bad time for him. That's often when he has these visions or gets pulled somewhere against his will. And the Space Force comes to visit him and says essentially, oh, wow, you remember what happened. Okay, well, we can still use you. And his wife is never conscious whenever these things happen. So she's missing all of it.
His wife is never conscious. That sounds like being asleep, but okay.
Well, at one point, she even tells him, like, please wake me up if anything happens.
Oh, wow.
And so a light comes to take him away, and he's, like, vigorously shaking her, and she won't wake up.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, something is clearly preventing this. So now he's getting pulled up into the ship, and he meets these Mayans, and they're working with, you know, this government guy, or I don't know. I can't remember exactly Gonzalez's affiliation, but he looks like a human wearing camo, and he's working with these aliens. Anyways, they take him up into a ship. They fix his eye. Ta-da, you're all healed now. But now the memories are coming back, and at first they send him too far back in the past. And this is a little nod to, they don't spell it out here, but he said it in other interviews, that he is also, amongst all of his other acclaim, he is a starseed.
Of course.
That's right. And
a starseed, of course, is someone who was an alien from another planet but came here either by way of a hybrid program where one of their parent was an alien and the other was a human, or
yeah,
you're just an alien who was adopted by humans and had to figure it out over the course of your life.
Right. And it turns out he was originally a blue avian himself.
Congratulations! Such huge news for you, Corey. Well, I'm sure that wraps everything up and he's feeling good now.
So this is where they can then tell the backstory of, like, we did the experiments on your grandfather, but we were really doing experiments on you.
Oh, no.
And I don't know if this is true in real life, but we also see that every time he's having one of his intuitive empath moments, that his eyes glow bright blue.
Whoa, okay, cool.
At least that's a visual cue in the graphic novel.
I'm trying to remember. I've heard this claim before. Someone whose eyes change color when they're remembering something or doing something. Maybe I'm just thinking of some of the more far-flung theories in the dissociative identity disorder community.
Oh, actually, I think I have encountered that.
Okay.
Obviously, I haven't looked at that anywhere close to what you have, but I think I remember one of the people with multiple personalities talking about how her eyes changed color.
Okay.
Anyway, so then we get to see all these flashbacks, and guess what? Not only have there been aliens in outer space that have been important to our history and present and all these secret wars going on, but there's also races that live under the Earth, and there are giant crystals down there that are massive supercomputers. Why not?
Oh, definitely.
He meets a lady who's one of the Anshar, the kind of the tall whites.
You can tell that he's told the artist to, like, she's hot. Yeah. She's got to be hot.
Yep.
Very important.
Pretty much.
I really want someone to meet a female alien who's just like 55, school teacher, it's a nice, like, short haircut, maybe 15 pounds overweight,
there
really
we go.
Polite.
You got to hand it to
it never happens. If a female alien's there, you're like, she's huge knockers, and she saved me, and then she put her boobs in my face.
Yeah, it's almost as if it's wish fulfillment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we hear from almost. Rael and Fred Bell.
Oh, yeah.
Megan Bell's father. He had the hot aliens that he slept with as well.
Whitley Strieber not quite hinting that his aliens are hot, but he does have the woman with the penetrating voice.
Yeah, and those deep black eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, they do show the dark AI god of the reptilian, the Draco. Okay, just in one picture, but they don't really even talk about him. Anyway, so he's being told about all these apocalyptic things that are going to happen and how only he can help the world. And thankfully, his wife is very supportive through all of this. She's as loving as any wife could be. But still, he's like struggling with substance abuse. They constantly show him with like pills in the foreground.
Ooh, okay.
And depict him being heavyset. And this is something that he feels is important to this narrative about himself, that he was on pills and feeling awful and just uncomfortable in his life and in his body. But when he finally learned his true purpose and his history, then his life came into order.
And this is probably when he's in his 40s?
Yeah, this would be in his 40s that all of this started coming about. So they don't have him talking to David Wilcock. Initially, he's reaching out to someone else at a UFO expo with this woman who encourages him to tell his story and not to be anonymous about it so that they can have an informant.
Oh, interesting. Oh, woman, if you're out there. I want to talk to you.
Yeah, I wonder how biographical that piece is, because we'll learn that he mixes fact and fiction.
Interesting.
I mean, if that wasn't abundantly clear at this point, but...
Well, not totally. I mean, so far, if I just knew what you've told me on microphone so far, I think I would be like, okay, a person who had a mental health episode and has interpreted it this way sincerely, but we'll learn more.
And here's that moment where he's trying to wake his wife up, like, oh, it's happening. The sphere is coming to get me. Oh, this is so common where there's like a picture of him pointing at something, but he's pointing the totally wrong way. It's like he's pointing at us. He's not pointing at the sphere. Well, anyway, there are worse examples. Anyway, so he gets pulled out. So this story isn't over. It's not like he's just recalling his past. They now have important work for him to do in the present as well. So the sphere comes and pulls him into the presence of the blue avians. And they are these tall blue figures, almost avatar-like, except the heads are completely different. And they have these kind of, I don't know, like colored mohawks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like kind of bright magenta off of the blue body. And they've got big black circular eyes.
The hair's kind of like a sea anemone.
I could see that. And also, there's a little bit of a tie into like biblical prophecy and end times phenomenon.
Oh, okay.
And he has this whole idea of the ascension coming.
Oh, wow. Which, okay, with Jesus?
Well, he doesn't say Jesus, but the idea is it's pretty much the rapture, but for the alien inclined.
Okay, so it's not Jesus himself.
Right, but at some point we're all going to be taken up. And he did show that earlier.
Gosh, there's just nothing new under the sun, is there?
Yeah, when he's showing the sun having some major blow-up event and showing all of these aliens and like a big praying mantis coming to the planet.
Hell yeah, what up?
He also shows what clearly looks like the rapture happening in Times Square. And it says, behold, the Lord comes to execute judgment on all and convict all the ungodly of all their deeds. I guess if I had to summarize it, I would say like he feels that when this moment happens, all will be revealed, all questions will be answered, and finally we'll realize like, oh, everybody was kind of right all along and they had all the right pieces, but instead of being literal Jesus, actually it was aliens or whatever it may be.
An Age of Aquarius kind of coming. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, very much this syncretism of we'll find a way to make everyone with good intentions right.
We'll get to disclosure, we'll get to the Age of Aquarius, we'll get to the rapture, we'll get to everything being out in the open.
So then it turns out that the person who had recruited him let a video leak, and now the public knows about him, and he got rejected from a job application. We're sorry, sir. You look very well qualified, except we found online this thing about you being involved in a blue chicken cult. And actually, I did a search for that because they show like a video and it says blue chicken cult leader.
Oh, so, you must have found blue oyster cult all over the internet.
Oh, well, it did bring up a video about Corey Good from one of his critics.
Okay.
When I searched for that with a very similarly named video. But anyways, now the secret is out. And
so sorry, someone who was in the government program somehow narked on him, or who narked on him?
The woman who got him to go on the record as having been in this program.
Uh-huh.
Apparently that got leaked out, like the recording of him, and then there was negative commentary interposed on top of it, and now he looks like a crazy person.
I see. So probably she recorded it and he like didn't realize it, or didn't realize he was having
less
of a casual conversation.
It got used in a way he wasn't expecting, and he did confront her about it, and she said, oh, I'm so sorry, we're trying to get that taken down right away, that wasn't our intention, but we'll find
I
later on.
I had no idea that you would not find your own words wholesome on the internet.
I find it such interesting foreshadowing that he's all upset here about a video getting leaked online before his deposition gets leaked online.
Oh, sure.
David Wilcock does show up because
there he is.
He gets interviewed by him. And of course, the rest is history.
Yeah, that's just a photo of David Wilcock, isn't it?
It sure is. Yeah, oftentimes they've just taken the photo, they've applied like a light filter and maybe put a few brush strokes on top of it. And then he gets whisked away to like other planet surfaces. And oh man, there's a lot going on here.
So what year do you think Corey Good would claim this was happening in?
Probably this would be somewhere between 2012 and 2015-16.
Okay.
I think is where all of these events of his kind of modern grown adult story is happening.
Okay. So if I imagined, just go with me for a second. If I imagined that this isn't all true, could it be that in his early 40s, he had he was going through really stressful parenting and he had this experience with his kids and then he developed a false memory? Does that fit in with what we know so far?
We could make the story that I know work around that.
Okay.
Sure.
But your intuition is that's not exactly right because of other stuff you know.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
I think it's less interesting than that. Well, okay. Interesting isn't the right word. It's not more prosaic than that either. It's not quite that.
Okay.
In my estimation.
Less sympathetic,
but
maybe.
But it's compatible with it. There we go. Yes. Okay. The false recovered memory would be a more sympathetic read on what
interesting.
Happened.
Interesting. Because, yeah, I mean, when I do hear like early 40s and it happened while you were interacting with your kids, I think of like a whole lot of women in particular, false memory stories.
Okay.
Early 40s, interacting with kids, suddenly was like, oh my God, my kid's 8. I remember when I was 8, this terrible thing happened.
Oh,
that's like such a common thing. So when you said he's playing with his kids and that's where it started, I was like, oh.
And if you're going to have a midlife crisis, that's a good time to have it too.
I mean, also it's around when people have their second wave of psychosis risk.
Okay. Interesting. One of the times he gets whisked away, he gets put into this confrontation with this major overlord, the Grand Pendar of the Draco. It's this tall reptilian creature that we saw on the cover. And he's upset because the Pendar has taken 3 humans hostage. And so he negotiates and demands that he release those ladies. So, you know, Corey Good is doing good work here.
Good.
So he wins this standoff. He frees the ladies. He's a good guy. And this is kind of a decisive moment against the Draco, and the blue avians congratulate him on all of this. And we see him back happy with his family. Things are good. And that's where we end off this first graphic novel, but very clearly with more to come. He's telling this guy he has to return on the spaceship back because I promised my kids we're doing Tickle Monster in the morning.
Okay.
To be continued in The Ascension Chronicles, 20 and back and back and back.
Cool.
That's the next one. Will it ever be released? We don't know. And then he lists the credits. And I got to say, if I just read the credits and looked up at the portfolios, I'd be like, oh, they could put a great comic together.
Okay.
Great graphic novel. I don't know if that's what happened. So that told me a lot more about his story and the narrative as he tells it. And you might be wondering, what exactly is the role of these blue avians? What is the important message that they are communicating to the Earth through him? Well, you might want to go to the spherebeingalliance.com website, which is also part of ascensionworks.tv. He's got a lot of entities, both alien and business-wise. But this is where you can take courses by Corey Good, and that'll take you over to ascensionworks.tv. But you can learn more about the Blue Avians and the Law of One, which is a David Wilcock thing that he's sort of, I don't know, I guess with permission appropriated, that he's adopted. So this was the one place where I found him describing who is the Sphere Being Alliance and what their message is. So Carrie, who is the Sphere Being Alliance?
Thank you for asking. Recently, the SSP Alliance was joined by a group of beings that no one had encountered before. They are a 6th to 9th density group of beings.
Whoa, 6th to 9th? I've never encountered higher than 4.
I've seen 12. Usually you skip from right around 5 to 12. 6th to 9th density group of beings that have been referred to as the Sphere Alliance. These new sphere beings have not only created an energetic blockade around Earth,
phew,
but have also done so around our entire solar system.
Oh, that's so helpful.
They are a non-violent group of beings who have brought assistance mainly in the form of a message.
Oh, what is this message, Carrie? Sounds important.
So glad you asked. What is the message?
This must be deep and profound and something someone couldn't just make up on their own.
Okay. Focus on increasing your service to others and to be more loving to yourself and everyone in order to raise your vibrational and consciousness level. Learn to forgive yourself and others, thus releasing karma.
That's nice.
Thus, this will change the vibration of the planet, raise the shared consciousness of humanity, and change humankind one person at a time, even if that one person is yourself. They tell us to treat your body as a temple and change over to a higher vibrational diet to aid in the process. The next question is, what is the warning? The Blue Avians also gave a warning with this message. They had tried to deliver this message 3 other times in the past, but it was distorted by humanity. They made it very clear that this information was not to become a cult or religious movement. Nor was Corey to put himself before the message or elevate himself to a guru status. Anyone who does so should be avoided and held accountable, including Corey. I'm never impressed by this. The Buddha did it too, where he was just like, you know, you really shouldn't listen to anyone. Even if I say something and you don't believe it, you shouldn't hang out with me. I'm like, what? All that does for me is give me like Okay, you're the false modesty guy.
Oh, but I feel like that works and pays dividends for so many
people. Point it out to us all the time. They'll be like, well, she said that we shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Teal said that she's not the final whatever. So-and-so said that we could leave any time. Well, I've stayed for 12 years to wait for this thing to happen, but she said.
And as long as they say it once, they can say whatever horrible contradictory things later.
Yeah.
Not that I think Corey Good is trying to be a cult leader here.
No. I mean, and it's obviously like a good sentiment. It just seems redundant in that atmosphere. Mm-hmm.
And we've encountered this so many times. The aliens come, they pull one person aside, and they give them this really important message, and it's something like, increase your service to others and be more loving to yourself and everyone to raise your vibrational and conscious level and learn to forgive yourself and others. Like, come on. Really?
Yeah, so much of this is really unimpressively repackaged old shit.
You set up a barrier around our solar system? That's huge! Like, you're out, beyond the Oort cloud? Like, how far out is this barrier? That's a gigantic barrier. And then this is the message you have for us? That's a huge surface area.
What does it even mean? What's around the Earth is big. Energetic blockade? We have to now decide, like, what that means. What kind of energy does it keep out? What kind of energy does it keep in? What does it look like? What is it made of? My brain starts to turn to mud.
Are you tired of being picked on for only wanting to talk about your cat at parties?
Do you feel as though your friends don't understand the depth of love you have for your guinea pig?
When you look around a room of people, do you wonder if they know sloths only have to eat one leaf a month?
Have you ever dumped someone for saying they're just not an animal person?
Us too.
She's Alexis B. Preston.
She's Ella McLeod.
And we host Comfort Creatures, the show where you can't talk about your pets too much, animal trivia is our love language, and dragons are just as real as dinosaurs.
Tune in to Comfort Creatures every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So if you head on over to ascensionworks.tv, his other website, you'll find that there's plenty of updates and blog posts and all of that stuff. But there's also a school going on, of course.
Got it.
You can sign up for classes. There's a mystery school on consciousness, the spirit archetypes, a series called Jumpers, the Empress archetype. There's various other teachers. Okay, so for the Accelerating Ascension online course, I don't know if you can see from there, but guess how much that'll cost you?
I cannot see. So I'm going to guess.
Important number.
Okay, I can see that it looks like it's more than three digits. So I'm going to say $612.38.
It's $333.
Oh, of course.
333.
Why didn't I spend more time thinking?
And there's some cheaper things here, too. There's a $33 activation and activism in the age of UAP disclosure.
And are these PDFs or videos?
Probably like a multi-video walkthrough, with exercises. I did not sign up for any of them. Hmm. And some of them are Corey Good. Some of them are other guest teachers. But you can take a journey into the Akashic Records. That'll cost you $250. It's a weekend workshop. Surviving Ascension, that'll be $233. And that's with Corey and his wife, Stacy.
Okay. Stacy, who doesn't have an E in her name.
Oh, go for consistency.
Yeah, come on. You got to get that in there.
So there you go. So you get kind of an idea of what the landscape is around Corey and what he offers. But things started to go a little sour with his deal with Gaia TV.
Now this I've heard a little about.
So 2017, he was still our golden boy and happily working with Gaia, but
somewhere around 2018, Corey left Gaia TV and left the show where he was, as you said, kind of the golden child.
Yeah.
And was kind of quickly replaced by this other person, Jason Rice. And Jason Rice also claimed to have gone to the 20 and back program.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a program, so there should be multiple members.
Yeah. In fact, Corey has even said this, that they keep trying. They keep coming to Earth trying to find their whistleblowers and no one's taking it up at him.
Okay.
Don't worry. Jason Rice is here to help.
Oh, yeah. I was also recruited. I've also been there and back again.
Yep. So when Corey drops off the map at Gaia, they just bring Jason Rice in and interview him about his experience at the 20 and back. And I watched this interview. Have you seen this?
I saw some TikTok clips of him speaking.
I'm coming forward now because there are thousands of others out there that have been through this, that have gone on a 20 and back program. And I'm not just talking about Americans, we're talking globally. And some of the people that did not come back, their stories need to be told, whether they were soldiers or scientists or just civilians. They provided and gave the ultimate sacrifice for humanity, and their stories need to be told. We need to have full disclosure. The people need to be aware of some of the things that humanity has done. It's time to heal and to grow from that.
Jason announces that he is too an intuitive empath, an IE, and I guess he doesn't outright say, or at least we don't see him say, that Corey was the impetus for him realizing that he had been in this program okay. too. But man, when I was watching him, I was like, oh no, you're like a guy who watched this and bought it, and then it developed your own false memories. That's how it felt to me.
Even that sounds generous, because I can just see Gaia saying, well, shoot, we lost the guy who comes on and talks about the secret space program. Oh, I know what we can do. Get some other guy who's willing to say he was in the secret space program.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing himself, and he seems to be a real guy, and his experience as a kid, it really sounds like he was basically singled out as a child for needing like behavioral intervention.
Okay.
And so he remembers these real things about going to a university and being asked to do like behavior intervention stuff. And like they would give me M&Ms, but then they'd take them away. And then they'd say, sit in the chair and get mad at me if I didn't sit in the chair and stuff that I'm like, I totally get why that's really upsetting for a child.
Okay.
But we may just be talking about pretty typical behavioral interventions that then many years later you hear Corey Good talk and you're like, I remember
there's
something.
More to that.
Yeah, I think that's what happened.
Between wrapping me on my knuckles and making me sit in the corner, they were also sending me off to Jupiter.
Right. And then he also thinks that on a day that he went to the aquarium, he wasn't really at the aquarium. That's a screen memory. And he had actually been sent to this other place where they were torturing him.
Oof.
It all sounded not quite right. But Corey Good gets offended.
Yes.
He's like, wait a minute. No one else can talk about this besides me.
This is my deal.
Which is a very bizarre reaction
yep.
for a sincere person.
It's like a bluff has been called.
Yeah.
They're sort of calling his bluff, at least the way I'm reading the situation, it feels like calling his bluff to say, well, you've implied this program, so there must be other members out there. Look, we found
one.
Oh,
he said there are. He has said there are.
So now he's sort of giving up the game by saying, wait a second, there can't be anyone else. This is my thing.
It's like how I've always said to you that I feel like the ballsy thing to do with Daryl Anka is to be like, oh my God, Bashar talks to me too.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk to Bashar? I'll let you talk to Bashar right now.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, Daryl Anka would be very upset if all of a sudden right. we're like, hey, sign up for our Bashar course. We're channeling Bashar and it'll only cost $99. He'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you'd think
so. That's my business.
You'd think so. So that is how Corey Good reacted.
And Corey tried to establish trademarks on some of these terms, like blue avians and secret space program. Though it turned out later, I think people found that the guy who wrote Behold a Pale Horse, Milton William Cooper, he had used the phrase secret space program. So Corey's like,
yeah.
Well, SSP, no one else has used that. That's trademark. That's mine.
Oh, buddy.
The phrase 20 and back, that's another one. He said, that's mine. You can't use that. Dark Fleet, that was another one. I came up with that. You can't use that.
Okay.
All seems very telling. And according to this Daily Beast article that you pointed me at, he sued them in 2020, saying that they were acting against him. And then they sued him back. And both of them, like on both sides, were accusing each other of Luciferianism.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I'm holding that lawsuit in my hands. I'm holding the initial filing. And yes, he accuses them of... He accuses them. He has 17 claims against them.
Oh, wow.
Violation of the RICO Act. civil RICO conspiracy. False designation of origin and federal unfair competition. Trademark and trade name infringement. Unfair competition. Colorado Consumer Protection Act. Breach of contract. Wow. Fraudulent misrepresentation. Intentional infliction of emotional distress. Negligent infliction of emotional distress. Harassment at work. Slander. Libel. Tortious interference, cyber stalking, and trademark infringement.
Wow. I mean, having watched a lot of videos of him subsequent to all this, you don't want to say someone has a persecution complex because, you know, maybe they're truly being persecuted, but he sounds like someone.
And you're gonna add to it.
He sounds like someone who feels very put upon.
Yeah, yeah.
By the world.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the stuff you were reading out loud, I was like, you know, it sounds paranoid.
Yeah.
To be frank about it.
He keeps referring to people like Jason Rice as being LARPs, aka live action role players. Like, well, they're obviously fake.
Yes, he feels that that's like a fan fiction kind of move on the part of the believers. Which mm-hmm. is so interesting. So he says this during the deposition.
Yeah.
That it is fan fiction. And I'm like, wow. I wonder if on any level he thinks that, or if that's just the line his lawyer has given him and he's sticking to it. I don't know. But so does he not even believe in the existence of like delusions and hallucinations?
Yeah.
But that doesn't seem possible because another part in his deposition, he refers to delusions and says that a lot of his followers are delusional.
Other people have delusions.
So, yeah. So.
But not him.
He's sort of making the case that delusions don't even exist and also that they do.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever serves him in the moment.
Yeah.
I think. And I feel like his life and his anger revolve around what serves him in the moment and his business and, mm-hmm. you know, what he's trying to build for himself. Mm-hmm. So you already had this skirmish between them, but then something happens, which we've already given away. But there's the deposition that's taken where opposing counsel has a chance to like walk him through a bunch of questions for 7 hours.
Opposing counsel is great, gotta say.
Yeah.
Very good at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Asks so many good reinforcing questions. And it's a long video, but I'm going to say if you've got to watch one part, I would say watch part three because that's where things really, it takes a while to build up to here's how we ask questions. Here's how you're going to answer them. Please refrain from doing this.
Sure.
And you're setting all these ground rules and basic biographical details. But by part three, if you look that up, and it's on YouTube, things really heat up because he starts getting Corey to talk about just how real these stories are, his intellectual property, as he keeps referring to it.
Which is interesting, even that phrase. So it emerged from your intellect then? It's the property of your intellect and not of the aliens who performed the behaviors you're describing?
Yeah, and being aware of this as I was reading the graphic novel, I kept encountering these ideas that were clearly just borrowed from other media properties, mm-hmm. sometimes just openly, and thinking, mm-hmm. you seem to be fine with incorporating the language of others mm-hmm. to a degree that you would be pissed if someone was doing it to you, because mm-hmm. here you are filing this lawsuit.
Oh, yeah. He also says the word trademark after he says any term that he considers trademarked by him. It's adorable. Carrie Poppy 2024.
Yeah, because he sees this guy as an adversary, which, you know, he is in this context.
Like, for instance, you've said you've done 20 and back journeys where you go away for over 20 years and you come back.
Yep, trademark.
And, okay. You say you've been visited by over a 6-foot-tall, blue-looking chicken-type creature.
Yeah, blue avian, trademark. Blue chicken was their slander.
What would you call it?
It's a blue avian, trademark.
So yeah, there's all kinds of setup where, you know, they're talking with him of accusations about Corey being addicted to illicit substances or abusing women. He responds to those, he denies them. But then he starts giving little details about how he feels about the UFO community as a whole.
Squirmy answers, I'd say.
No kidding. And he characterizes them, and this was from a later video that he released, but he'll say like 60 to 70% of the community is truly love and light. They're wonderful people. They're great.
Okay.
More power to them. But that 30 to 40% are, and this addresses your earlier point, mentally ill.
Oh, wow.
Opportunists.
Oh, why are those lumped together?
Or just out for attention and money. Well, he's like, you know, they break down into these categories.
No, I know, but it's unfair to like the people who are like sincere to lump them in with like, well, there's the people who have mental illness and are struggling, but then there's the liars.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, again, the world is all either for him or against him.
Yeah.
They're against me, so
right.
We need not know much more about them. Mm-hmm. Let God sort them out.
Yeah. Man, 30 to 40%. Yeah, that's a really sizable number. I'm sure a lot of his fans were offended.
It's just a kind of a weird community. A lot of them are kind of anarchist type mindsets. They don't believe in the judicial system. They don't believe in taxes. It's pretty wild. You talk to the people you have a problem with. You don't do what a lot of people in this community do. They just go and bitch and complain. It's obvious that community is completely collapsed because of its infighting, backstabbing, gossiping that, you know, they took advantage of.
And when you say the community, what, let's be specific, what community are you referring to?
The esoteric disclosure community.
And what does esoteric disclosure community mean to you?
People that have more esoteric spiritual beliefs gravitate together, as do people who believe in aliens and want to, higher technologies that are not disclosed that they want released. We're here because of the lack of ethics in this community, and we're here directly because of it.
Who are the probably mispronouncing it, the cable and the dark forces?
The cable?
Cabal?
Yeah, the cabal.
Who is that?
In conspiracy theory land and in this community, it is the secret government that is controlling or hiding the existence of aliens and trying to take over the world.
Black magic, what does that mean to you?
Well, what it means to the community, voodoo, Satanism, all of the darkest, the conspiracy community is very leery of anything black magic or dark with dark magic in it.
And so, boy, way to turn the community against you. Of course, he thought this video would never get out.
Sure.
But now all of a sudden, they can hear him talking about the system of elders within the alien community. And boy, you can picture who he's talking about because we know these figures. We've talked about them on our show. He's talking about like this group of people who kind of runs everything within the UFO community. You have to pass ideas by them. Mm. They're going to either accept it or shoot you down. You're not supposed to...
Unofficially, you mean, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you're not supposed to break rank and sue anybody. You're supposed to approach the elders and get their response.
And find your little niche that doesn't threaten theirs. Oh, you're the guy who experienced a space program. You're not the investigative journalist who reports on it. Or you're not Whitley Strieber who got abducted by aliens but not as part of a government thing. You need to find your lane.
Mm-hmm. He kept trying to make the point like, well, they never wanted to do contracts or pay taxes. They're all trying to avoid all that. I kept asking for accountants and they wouldn't give them to me. Mm. So he has all these gripes about the community itself. But also he keeps referring to the community as either delusional.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the people who pay for his services. Exactly.
Yeah.
And
it's content that's created by you.
Yes.
Okay.
And all of the delusional people in the community who... take this information. It is what you call fan fiction.
Okay.
To create this.
And so people are delusional if they believe it.
They're delusional if they believe they were in the secret space program and in contact with the Anshar, who are my creation. They're borrowing my creation and delusionally having their own experience.
And they can't write about their own experience.
They can't write and profit off of, just like Han Solo, the whole Star Trek. This is an IP that is like Star Trek.
It just has these really derogatory things to say about them that gives you this idea of his attitude towards his supporters, which is, you're all a bunch of saps.
Yeah, or at least like, come on in with one hand and stay away with the other.
Mm-hmm. And as the opposing counsel pushes him on these questions of like, okay, well, you're saying that this is part your personal experience and part in your own intellectual property and invention. So which parts are which? Let's break that apart. And
then this glorious lawyer just sits there and makes him answer when he does not want to answer.
Are you saying it's dramatization or is it real?
Part of it's real, part of it's dramatization. Like I've said about all of this.
What part is dramatization?
Be more specific, please.
Sure. What part of the 20 and back is dramatization and not real?
Well, the 20 and back itself is my creation. That's why I trademarked it, and that's why it's a part of my intellectual property.
So does that mean it's not real? It's dramatization?
What does it matter if it's real or not?
I'm asking you whether it was dramatization or was it real?
It's a real part of my dream or delusion, of whatever you want to call it. I created all of this as on top of the... training that I did have and the experiences that I did have, I extrapolated this stuff out and created it.
Okay, but it's part of your dream or delusion, you call it, correct?
If whatever y'all want to call it.
Well, what do you call it?
I call it my intellectual property.
Yeah, there's one line in particular that really floored me. He says, he's kind of revealing how he justifies all of this, that my story is inspiring to others. But then what he says about whether it matters if this is true or not.
Mm-hmm. So you do believe the information you're getting is needed to get to the masses. Why?
Because of the positive effect it's had on the thousands and thousands of people that watch Cosmic Disclosure, came to the conferences, told me that my story and information changed their life, watching me go through this overweight guy on medications on the show, all shaking and going through this complete metamorphosis, motivated them and inspired them to make the changes in their life. I can produce all sorts of people and information to where they claim that my information has changed their life in a good way.
Even though the information is false, it's having beneficial results with people that read it.
Well, I mean, people believe things that are false all the time.
But answer my question. Even though the information is false, people are having beneficial reactions by reading it, correct?
Even though some of the information is a creation, people are getting benefit from it.
Yeah, how crummy. I mean, if he means this, how crummy. Like, to be like, I'm going to be the guy who tells you the truth. The whole world has been lying to you. I'm finally telling you the truth. And then behind your back, in court, under oath, on camera, I'm going to say the opposite, that none of this is veridical.
And he does his best to avoid it, saying outright that this is made up. But the questions keep coming, and here he goes.
Yeah, so crummy.
And this is why I left that conference just kind of down in the dumps. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is ugly. And it's just said so much about this whole community, because we always are in that position where we have to sort of guess at people's motives, but we can't say definitively what they're thinking, how much they believe what they're saying. But this was just so clearly, he found an opportunity to make a thing. Then he talks about the money involved.
And in the prior year, prior to that, had you made multi-millions off of your brand?
No.
Then how could they destroy multi-million if you hadn't been making that?
They knew that David Wilcock was making $4 or $5 million off of his.
So you're saying David Wilcock in 2017-18 made $4 or $5 million?
Off one course.
Okay.
And my first course, by the time they did pull all their shit, I had made nearly $1 million off of. And that course, most of the money you make after, for months and years after, you make more and more and more residual. And on top of that, I did two more courses that should have made at least that much money, okay? So those were the multiple millions come from.
So in the year prior to my clients releasing the videos, you're saying that you profited, not gross, but profited, 700, 800, 900,000 in that vicinity from your courses.
It was around $750,000 that I had grossed up until when he released his video. After that, all the sales dropped.
Wow.
And this is where the bottom line comes in. He felt like this was a clear demonstration. Usually this is the kind of thing you need in a lawsuit of like, they cut out my bottom line. I can show my decreased revenue and I lost 90% of my revenue. But just the numbers that he was expecting off of this, combined with his attitude towards
his customers.
Yeah. It's just so gross and cynical. Yes. Ugh. Yeah. It was depressing to me.
Yeah. You know, I found his bankruptcy filing from like, I want to say 2006. And I'm just thinking of this guy's whole trajectory, you know, like such a sort of dramatic, emotional up and down sort of life. And then in 2006, you have to declare bankruptcy. And then what, 15 years later or something, you start making just like crazy amounts of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would change you. I also wonder if we should be updating our standards about what we expect from people who do have serious like mental events, but also have the wherewithal and the opportunity to find different explanations for them and are choosing not to.
Yeah.
And I feel like he falls in that category for me where I'm like, yeah, actually your initial story, I've heard that story before, I can buy it. And guess what a lot of other people do? They go and they look it up.
Yeah.
They go and they look it up. They find an alternative explanation and they try to at least like hear it through, you know? And I, with him, after seeing what I did at that deposition, I'm like, I bet you got on the internet and you do know the opposite mm-hmm. explanations.
Yeah.
I bet you did have this experience like a lot of people do. And then you figured out what it might be and you were like, ooh, that doesn't make me anything.
And even with Whitley, who constantly refers to the opposing explanation and dismisses it.
Yeah.
We can still kind of give him a pass because we think, okay, but
he's trying.
Part of his confusion about this is his inability to accept these alternate explanations. And I mm-hmm. think with Corey Good, without that deposition, we'd be in that same position where we'd be like, okay, but maybe he's just like in a mental state where he yes. can't really confront this.
Absolutely.
But having heard him answer those questions that way.
Doesn't feel that way.
Okay, so what gets even more of a bummer about this is that, of course, there's a big fallout after the deposition is released. So the deposition was on September 26th of 2022.
Okay.
And the leak was in December of that year.
Okay.
By December 14th, he has a fresh response that he posts on YouTube, and he's out hiking in the woods with snow.
And the opposing attorneys were going to try to completely discredit me by asking if I have talked to 8-foot-tall blue chickens and if I lived on Mars and that type of thing. In the community, that's okay, yeah, we'll listen. In a court of law, delusional. And one of the things that they're counting on is that if I did claim all of this stuff, that they would be able to label me as delusional. And then, of course, it's very difficult to trademark delusions and dreams and that sort of thing, because anybody can have the same dream. Anybody can have the same delusion. So how can you trademark it? How can you call it your IP? So that's what was being built towards. Well, I can tell you this. After Leon Isaac Kennedy released that video and over 30,000 people saw it, we lost close friends, people we worked with, and followers in the community. Not one of them asked us if it was true. Not one.
But he tries to spin this. Actually, there were a couple of videos. He released another one in early 2023, January 5th, with his wife. Same setting, they're out in the woods. But he has these videos, and he's turned this around where enough of his followers have stuck with him and chosen to believe that he was just saying what he needed to in that moment. And he reinforces that, like, oh, well, in the deposition, I have to be asserting my intellectual property. That's the only language they'll understand. So I had to answer that way. And thankfully, my true believers have understood that, but others have fallen by the wayside.
This claim is I lied in court, but okay.
Yeah. Right, which...
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's how it sounds to me anyway.
I hope in future installments of these legal proceedings, they bring up those videos and say, okay, he's telling us he lied in his deposition. But he and his wife are both saying that they've been getting hundreds of emails from people saying that we had to do this and we're starting our own community apart from this toxic, backstabbing, slandering community.
I was told he's not going to start a religious movement.
Remains to be seen how religious this gets. But he's got more plans and he's still going to make that video game based on his story. And he's working on a Bigfoot series now.
Okay, cool.
We're going to hire real life mercenaries to go look for Bigfoot.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Okay.
Bigfoots, take note. Watch out.
There was a moment where Stacy said in one of these videos,
it's, you know, to protect my truth, my life story. And, you know, like I said, anyone can make up their own stories. Just
make up your own. Don't steal it.
Whoa.
To the audience. And then Corey says,
make up your own. Don't steal a person's life story and expect them to be okay with it just because you call it your truth.
But it's not your life story. It's not.
It's not. But also, like, Even that would be fine. Like, people make biopics without permission all the time. People write about other people all the time. Life rights isn't a thing. It's a thing you can sell. But,
and I know he doesn't think about that when he's pulling things from other people and media.
Oh, my God.
It's just only when he's the target of it.
This is making just like every assignment I had in grad school light up at the same time. Like, no, it's all wrong. It's all wrong.
But this was such a moment of like the unsinkable rubber duck, as James Randi would always talk about. He would expose someone like Peter Popoff on live TV on the Johnny Carson show. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Uri Geller. And they just pop right back up and people keep believing because as a whole, many people have very low standards of evidence and don't hold people to these things. They'd rather have been right all along than to be corrected and not keep making the same mistake.
But I don't know what the breakdown is there.
But the way that he and his wife categorize it is that, well, this event really sifted people out in our lives. It showed who the true upstanding people of light are.
Wow.
And the dark forces. So,
I mean, I kind of agree.
Well, there was a sifting for sure.
Yes.
Maybe Stacey, not the way you're saying it.
Yeah, Stacey, who in your life might be deceptive? Gosh, let's think about it really hard.
I didn't know all of that, but learning a good chunk of that during the Contact in the Desert conference, really put me in a sour mood.
Yeah, I get that.
Oh, yeah, they also have the Light Warrior Legal Fund. If you want to throw money into a hole, you can send it to Corey.
Do you see how much he's raised? Can we see?
No, he seems to insinuate that it's been hundreds of thousands of dollars, at least by saying that that's what he's been paying and that you've all been supporting him at Light Warrior Legal Fund.
So I'm guessing that first of all, I know that he first got a different lawyer and then he had to change lawyers because the lawyer he had chosen wasn't barred in the state where he needed them to be barred.
Oh,
so he picks this second lawyer. But that second lawyer, I wonder if she basically said to him, like, look, dude, I'm looking at this and the only thing I can defend is if you are telling me you're a fiction writer and this is your IP.
Oh, wow.
If that's what you're saying, I can defend that. You know, that's what I'd probably say if I were in her position. So I wonder if then he's like, okay, no, I can make that work. I can make that work. Okay. And then gets up there and is like, I can't make it work.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, my guess.
That opposing counsel was also really brilliant and early on saying like, well, you're obviously of above average intelligence and kind of buttered Corey up. That was a great move.
Yeah, did it work?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Because it got him, I think, to just be a little more...
This is my friend.
Falsely in control of the situation.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I should mention one of the allegations was that...
Wasn't there an incident, though, at the Conscious Life Expo where you were pretty inebriated and you were in a car yelling and whatnot?
Objection.
No.
No? You don't remember that?
No.
Okay.
Oh.
Conscious Life Expo, you say?
Yeah.
You've been there.
Oh.
Shout out.
Yeah, I wish I was in hearing range if that did happen.
He denied that. He said, I don't even remember shouting outside a car. And okay. My friends get drunk at these things, but I don't.
He's just always the innocent little flower, and everybody else is just so mean to him.
Yeah, I wonder what that story was.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there could be nothing to it. You know?
Yeah, totally.
I hate to always have to do this, but I see so many parallels with all of Trump's legal problems right now, that there's this public narrative that you stick to, say whatever you want outside of the confines of a court, and then you're stuck in the court. And actually, we don't have anything about the 2020 election being stolen.
Uh-huh.
But we've got our 2000 Mules documentary for everybody else to watch.
Oh, I don't know about that documentary. How exciting.
Oh, yeah. It's by Dinesh D'Souza.
Oh, okay. I know who that is. Yeah.
And that's just, of course, one of the many false narratives around the 2020 election. But I get the same feeling of here's the narrative that I give to my followers, and here's the narrative when I'm actually cornered and have to tell the truth.
Yeah, totally. That checks out.
So there you go. I think it's an insightful story. It's a depressing story, but it's also... It's a wild story.
Yeah.
What he came up with, his whole new cast of aliens that he created as his intellectual property, and then how he's tried to defend it. What a character.
Yeah. What are the next 10 years going to look like for that guy? That's one of those positions where I'm like, shoot, you might go off and become a priest. You might go and start a ayahuasca clinic in Costa Rica. Right? I don't know what's next for you.
Just know every time you see Corey Good in the lights, know that I'm thinking, oh, he's still around. Because that should have been the end of it.
Okay, yeah. And I'm
thinking, at least in this community.
Oh, he's still around.
Oh, I'm pissed.
It's funny which like characters make one of us just like, no, yeah. I cannot. And the other will be like, oh.
Sets my teeth on edge.
This is cool.
Yeah, maybe it was watching 4 hours of deposition.
No, for sure. And in this case, it's like, yeah, I mean, he's really ignoring his potential harms.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Real harms to real people.
Yep.
Well, I don't know how to turn that into a happy ending, but hey, thanks for coming along with us for all of that. I hope you are entertained and also maybe furious. I don't know. Well, I guess that's it for this episode.
Furitainment. There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. We don't deliver it every time, but sometimes.
All right. That's it for our show. Our theme music is by Brian Keith Dalton.
This episode was edited by Ross Blotter.
Our administrative manager is Ian Kramer.
You can support this and all our investigations by going to MaximumFund.org/join, JOIN.
You're a daisy if you do.
You're a sunflower if you don't.
That still sounds good.
Yeah, it does still sound good. Okay, the sunflower is the sunflower is taking over a field. It's growing slowly. After time, it's going to be a whole field of sunflowers, and then they're going to become a member when they're rich.
All right.
Yeah.
And remember.
And so you're saying Anshar is unique to you. No one else can communicate to them but through you.
Let's see, Anshar.
Or just answer my question.
It's in my franchise Bible.
It is
my creation. I'm a content creator.
Understand?
Whether I have my life stories mixed with some drama, which I've always made public as well, and in this book.
Do you remember my question?
Yeah.
Okay, what is my question?
The Anshar are a creation.
It's not my question. My question is, can anyone else communicate to Anshar?
To something I created?
Other than through you.
That's something I created. That's something I trademarked. That's part of my trademark. No.
Are you the only person who was in the secret space program?
No.
There were others.
Right.
So if someone else...
No, your question was, so did I disparage anyone?
So my question is now, if you were not the only one there, why couldn't someone else talk about their experience in the secret space program?
As long as they don't talk about the stuff that I created based on my... my real IP here. It says I created a lot of the stuff. I created Darkfleet. Darkfleet didn't exist before I talked about it. Now all these people are popping up. I was on Darkfleet. It's part of my story.
All sorts
story.
Of fleets that are darker in color throughout.
But
all sorts
they're using every bit of my IP.
And you state you've gone away for over 20 years, and you come back, and you haven't aged. Correct?
Well, the 20 and back story in the book is that you're taking off planet, you serve 20 years, your age regressed, and you're put back in time to where you were first removed.
Is that the story or is that what happened to you?
It is the story.
So it's not what happened to you?
Not necessarily. Well, it's a lot of these things are memories that I had that I wrote down, and some of these memories could be real, or they could be creation. I'm not exactly sure.
Did you ever go to space?
Did I ever go to space?
Yes.
In my physical body?
Yes.
I don't believe so, but I travel astrally, and I travel out to outer space.
Do you put a footnote in your book that this is embellished, and this is not, this is fictional, this is... not real.
It says that there's Corey with his real story, and here's the fake or the science fiction story built on top of Corey's story. It says that in here.
Okay.
What is up, people of the world? Do you have an argument that you keep having with your friends and you just can't seem to settle it? And you're sitting there arguing about whether it's Star Trek or Star Wars, or you can't decide what is the best nut, or can't agree on what is the best cheese?
Stop doing that. Listen to We Got This with Mark and Hal, only on Max Fun.
Your topics asked and answered objectively, definitively, for all time.
So don't worry, everybody. We got this.
We got this. Thank you. Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network.
Of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.